thank you for this opportunity to appear before you today. And also to thank Pastor Dion for his openness and insights that have made this appearance possible today. And he's been great, and it's a dialogue that I respect and I've learned a lot from, and it's helped me and it's helped our organization immensely. My name is Bob Franklin. I am one of the 9 publicly elected members of the BART Board of Directors. In my role as a director, I was asked about 6 weeks ago to meet with members of the BART Police Department. They expressed a willingness to proactively engage in efforts to begin to repair damaged relations within the community. The goal of improved relations will never bring back the life of Oscar Grant III, but it is one necessary step to help prevent tragedies like this from occurring again. And again, nothing good can come out of a human being losing a life prematurely. But it is my belief that open, respectful dialogue is a healthy movement forward. The more we learn from each other, the better off we will be. I am here today with the BART police officers. We come today to engage in some of this dialogue with the ultimate goal in building a relationship of mutual respect. So I just, again, like to thank everyone here and to express how the work that you have done has helped me personally. I've listened to, I might not have been here at all the town hall meetings or at the caravan of for justice in Sacramento, but I watched them on YouTube and I've learned a lot from you, and I respect how you have the different tactics you've taken to deal with this problem. And with that, I'd like to turn it back over to Pastor Dio. Thank you very much. And I would also like to describe some of the police officers that are here today and show how my respect for them is because they have a willingness to listen. And in my experience with them, they've been great officers, but they're not perfect. And they're willing to listen and learn and hear from you and to engage and to return back. So I'd like to bring up one of our police commanders, who's the highest ranking here, Commander Gibson. We also have the president of the BART Police Managers Association, Lieutenant Greg Savage. Another member of the BART Police Managers Association, Lieutenant Frank Lucarelli. President of the BART Police Officers Association, Officer Jesse Saccone. And there's one other officer who I have just meeting for the first time, Officer Mark Brooks.
The history.
All right, what I've asked the officers to do was bring the pocket-sized version of the Bill of Rights. They had showed me this, and I felt it was important that everybody had a copy. So we'll pass this out. And I've asked, all right, wonderful. I always call everybody Brother Gibson, to just the church background, I mean, to give us a little history of what this is. So if you can summarize this process as far as the history of how this Bill of Rights came. This is not something just for Alameda or BART. This is something all peace officers in the state of California, from my understanding, California, operate under. So he's gonna share with us some history of how this took place.
Hi, good evening. And again, thank you for letting us come before you. We really appreciate it. Pastor Dion, thank you for tapping my shoulder. It's probably long overdue. I just wanted to share with you why, you know, every time you have some legislation, whether it's imperfect or not, it usually has a history. This has a history. And it goes back to the early 70s. This legislation was actually, it was union driven, union supported. And the reason that it came forward was because back in the 70s, there were no procedural rights usually for officers. And there are a lot of cases, a whole lot of them down in the Southern California. You have cases where an officer maybe is a whistleblower, sees some wrongdoing, and decides that the right thing to do is to say something, and guess what? Next thing you know, he finds himself transferred to graveyard or terminated. Or you have a case where, you know, you're just not one of the chief's boys, and you're not well-liked, and without any kind of due process whatsoever, you can just be fired. And so a group of people got together, not just officers, but again, Teachers Association, other unions, were able to pass this legislation to give peace officers some sort of a procedural bill of rights. And it goes into, and you can read it as it's going around, it's things about how to conduct investigations. It's things about conducting it at a reasonable hour. And again, I kind of go back to the old days where it would almost be like a cartoon sometimes. You'd have the person who was accused of something kind of sitting under a bright light with about five or six different people banging questions at them, depriving them of sleep, and that kind of thing. And so that's what the intent was to combat, is that sort of questioning. And it talks about how many people may be present at an investigation at an interview, your right to actually record the interview, and your right to, almost like Miranda, your right to have some sort of representation, either union or an attorney, and just procedural things on how to handle an investigation. I've also, he's passing out the pocket version. I also have the full version, which I would suggest that you read at your leisure, because the copy that you have is abbreviated, and this has this has the total text of the legislation, and again, I think it's worth reading over at your leisure. The other thing that I've attached on the back of this is actually a penal code section, which sometimes gets confused with the Peace Officer Bill of Rights, which is actually a government code section. And that part, that speaks to what you that have been at the board meetings, you've heard a lot of talk about confidentiality of investigations and whether or not who you can release information to. And the penal code is what basically makes the disclosure a misdemeanor. And that's where the actual law is. And so it's related to what's in the government code, but it's a specific section that talks to personnel records, and that's where the confidentiality is dealt with. So that's it. And again, thank you for letting us come here, and we'll await your questions.
All right. Wonderful. Let's appreciate them. Now, I like roll call. I want to show a hand of those of you who are standing up here that you are willing to engage the community and that you are willing to come back and help the community better understand BART, policing. If you're willing to do that, will you raise your hand? All right. Everybody raise your hand? All right, good. That's what y'all said y'all was going to do. I ain't put them on the spot. They already said they were going to do this. So what I want to do now, like I said, in a circle of leaders, I can't speak for the other organizations. Circle of leaders, one thing that I really appreciate about what we do is that we want to hear from the community, and this is an opportunity for the community to get to do something that I don't know if it's been done anywhere else. That's actually have a dialogue with BART Police. They're not here. They represent BART. They work for BART, but these are individual people who have people behind the shield who want to do some work with the community. What they need from you is some questions that you may have for them to go back and get the answers if they can't give those answers right now. Now, you know anything about the case is a gag order, so you can't ask anything about the case. But there are other strategies that may be in place. Some of the issues that we're talking about as far as the demands, you know, about supporting a community review board. So here, if you have a question, let's take real quick to field some questions. Minister Key.
Just a couple of questions. Brief review. Pocket. officers have a right to political activities off duty. And so my initial question is, right now, are you on duty or are you off duty as we're representing us to this meeting this afternoon?
I'm as off duty as you can get. And I speak for all of us. We are totally off duty, off the clock. No one's getting paid.
Is there any other question? Yes.
Yeah, I'm just wondering in general, do you guys support or oppose the legislative efforts that were made in 2007 to create more transparency and accountability?
He wants to know, did you support some 2007 legislations that would create more accountability and transparency?
As far as what?
As far as police forces. My understanding is that police unions threaten the legislature in a number of ways. Hundreds of police officers showed up in the legislature to get the bill defeated, which it was. It never made it out of committee.
So were any of you a part of a 2007 to stop accountability and transparency? Or do you even know what he's talking about?
I'm not familiar with the bill. The only thing, and I'm only speaking for myself, not anybody else, and my colleague Jesse may feel different from me because he's got a different position. But if the question is kind of getting toward, accountability, community review boards, civilian review, I think we have all kind of gone on record as being for that. I want to be as transparent as I can. I support the effort. I'd like to see it put forth and created jointly. I don't want it one way or the other. It shouldn't be us, having some sort of kangaroo court, and it shouldn't be the community only also. I would like to see some joint participation, but I think all of us can speak and say that we support that.
My name's Greg. I've been with BART for 27 years. 20 of those years, I've been, like you see in the handouts there, representing police officers. Whether it was in the Police Officers Association, or now I hold the title of the president of the Police Managers Association, which would be the sergeants that are, show up on scenes with officers and lieutenants. I represent them, so I wear two hats at work. I'm a lieutenant, and I have over the years disciplined officers. But at the same time, of the 48 people I represent, because the nature of police work, and people do get in trouble. So I represent them. I happen to be that representative when they, so they're not grilled with, quote unquote, unlawful questions like the Bill of Rights say. So I sit there as a representative for them. Now, to answer your question about transparency, I will tell you, I have been on the record, and I have told the board of directors, and Director Franklin knows this, that I am okay, as representing the BPM, of some sort of civilian involvement, oversight, if you want to use that word, with the police department. And that takes a lot to come back. You don't see too many representatives of police associations saying that. Now, I will tell you this, though. I go back. My first introductions to police oversight, if you will, was not too far from here, was the city of Berkeley. I was a young officer. Kind of somebody took me under their wings and brought me to some PRC meetings about 25 years ago. And I'll be frank with you, I did not like the way those meetings worked, and I still don't today like how they work. And there's other examples of police oversight review boards that I don't agree with. Now, there's others that I think work real well in the Bay Area. San Jose being one, some up in Sacramento, and I was starting to learn more about some around the state where their citizens are involved in police oversight, police review, looking at, where investigations looked at thoroughly. So there's some I like and some I don't like, but I have been on record with the board saying that as long as we, work at it together and we come up with what works best for BART, that the people I represent, we're okay with some sort of, and we don't know what it, how it looks or tastes or feels like right now, but some sort of civilian oversight, at least from the BPMA, we're okay with it at this point. We just don't know what it looks like. But we've already been meeting for two or three weeks now with the ad hoc committee. Those have been going to the board meetings that, the BART Board of Directors came up with an ad hoc committee that's looking at police oversight. And they have invited both the Police Officer Association and myself as the BPMA to those meetings. And I would consider pretty active dialogue. Frank discussions have been taking place. And then where it's going to go from here, don't really know yet, but I can tell you this, it seems to be on somewhat of a fast track for something occurring.
Okay. Excuse me. I want to acknowledge, first of all, your willingness to come out and be in this kind of a setting with people in the community. And because there's a lot of people who should be here, who wear your uniform, probably could learn a lot from being here. That being said, with respect to the presentation on the police officers' Bill of Rights, I understand that this is a legislation that is based on labor relations. That's correct.
Correct.
And what it has to do is with the protection of, as a former union member, the collective bargaining unit from being violated. Okay. My problem, and I don't have a problem with that because I've been in unions before, been a Teamster, been other things, but the problem is that with respect to due process, this creates a double standard of due process with respect to everybody else. No one else would have been able to go to another state with a murder charge on them like that. No one else would have been allowed to just pick the time when they would be questioned about a crime like that. And I know that those are options that people are able to opt out of and opt into with the Police Officers' Bill of Rights. But I think the problem is with the community is that we understand that you all need your protection. There are some people who are willing to blow the whistle. But this seems to be another layer of due process rights that regular citizens don't have. Certainly that the young man who got killed didn't have. And so then that is part of the problem here, is that your lives are covered by the legislature as being actually more worthwhile and more worth protecting by law than anyone else's. And I just want to hear your comment on whether or not you thought that there was a double standard here created by this thing.
Can I have a shot?
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of in an interesting position because I'm a union member, I'm a member of the Managers Association, but with my position, where I'm normally at is I'm giving the discipline, and so I'm the one that's involved in the investigations. And so again, with a little due respect to President Saigon and Savage, it actually has been it handcuffs me sometimes with some of the things that we want to do. I do recognize that, and it has to make me better at my job to be able to work around it. My point here was not really to justify it. I just wanted to know, wanted to give you guys the history of how it came about.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, and just you have intentions, and then I think there's a lot of laws that you have something that really bad happens, and then you enact a law, and it takes it all the way over to the other side, maybe excessively so. I feel both sides of it because I'm, you know, I have to constantly switch hats, and I have had pretty serious. I've done a few internal investigations, and I've had some investigations hampered, and I've had to work a whole lot harder because I have to comply with the law. So.
My question is, as it's pretty much on the level with Reverend Roof was speaking out, but speaking about the public safety, you know, and that's one of the things that he was saying, you know, like the time that this officer crossed the line, there should have been somebody looking at the safety of the public.
They can't make any comment about
it. I know that. I understand that. But I'm speaking about because it's in here. You know what I mean? And I'm just responding on it. Because it's in here, okay? Human rights in here, you're speaking about is that human rights in this book here, for everybody of this, the human rights of the police.
He's asking the human rights that's spoken of in that pamphlet, is that the human rights of everybody or just the human rights of the police?
Well, the legislation in there is specific to, it's specific to police. That particular government code 3300, and that's what they're referring to.
The police?
Yeah, within that particular government code.
Okay, so
not to,
this don't consider the public, then, is that right?
Right. Well, I'll admit it was enacted for public safety officers and with public safety officers in mind, and it is specific. Now, if you're asking me about my opinion as to the rights of others, I don't even know how to answer because, you know, courses are paramount important.
But the act is federal of the human rights, which was passed by President Johnson. Do that until include the police and the public all the same under that bill?
Absolutely.
Question. Chairman, I thank you all for being here as well. It does show tremendous strength to the community for support overall. I have a question for the future. God forbid that we have to use it. But for those that are present here, can you teach us what procedures or steps we should follow if we do come across an officer who steps out of line? What steps should the public know that they can take, and how, or if there's a written procedure that they need to follow to make sure that their matter is addressed?
All police departments in the state of California have a procedure, and we do too. And if anybody felt their rights were stepped on by a police officer or have a general complaint about anybody in the police department or the police department in general, they can always contact any of the supervisors. They can contact the on-duty watch commander. Just simply call the 877 number or call 464-7000 and say you want to talk to the watch commander, you want to make a complaint. If there's also an internal affairs office, and that's 510-464-7029, and you can always call them to voice a complaint also. And it's also on the website.
Do you have the website address?
It's BART.gov, www.BART.gov.
Thanks for that question. I've always felt it's important for everyone in the public to make us do our job better. And there's no better way to make us do our job better, especially as administrators, the three of us, let alone all five of us. The three of us as administrators, there's no better way to make our organization and all the personnel work better than to keep us honest and keep us doing our job. And that's if you're, whether it's yourself or a loved one or someone you know, comes in contact with a police officer, and you don't think things were done right. And if I could share a quick little story, I was waiting for this question to hopefully come up to share with you that processes can take time. And I know a lot of people everybody wants instant answers or instant satisfaction, like within a week or 2 weeks. But I will quickly share with you that, you know, someone in my own family, my son, and you know, being in this profession, you know, sometimes you look at yourself a little harder. But my son had a run-in with a police officer with a group of his friends, and it's apropos that we're in this setting here, but they were leaving a church function on a Friday night. You know, mom and dad were trying to keep him out of trouble, and he's at a church function in another city, not near here. He's at a church function, and they're coming, and we know where they're at, and all the parents knew where they're at, and they're leaving about midnight. But an officer pulled them over, and as relayed to me later, because he woke us up at 1:30 in the morning, mom, dad, you're not going to believe what happened. And I won't bore you with all the details, but as he explained to me, I said, well, something has to be wrong here. Then I called another parent. At 2 in the morning, they said their daughter came home and said,
explain the same story. And I'm here to share with you that you have to pick up the phone and call or write. And in this case, I wrote, ended up the next day, I sat down with my wife and we wrote like a 5-page letter after I called the watch commander at that jurisdiction at 2:30 in the morning. And I wrote and I laid out to him what my son had told me had happened to him and his friends leaving this church setting. They just left like 3 blocks away. And as it turned out, as my gut told me, you know, this officer pulled them over for no reason. And I knew it my own, but just being in the profession. But I made a formal complaint with this police department because I took it very seriously. Because I couldn't have my son, knowing I'm in this profession, just let that go by. He didn't want me to make the complaint, actually. But once he saw mom and dad were, he kind of went, and then him and the group in the car started talking. No other parent, for whatever reason, would make a complaint. But I couldn't let this go by. So fast forward, it took about 8 months. And I made a formal complaint for unprofessional conduct, rudeness. And I documented every F word that was said to my son and women in the car. I mean, it was just a profane-laced tirade for whatever reason. I don't know, the guy was having a bad night. But I'm here to share with you about 8 months later, I got this letter in the mail. 8 months later. And not that I'd forgotten about it, but it took quite a while. I got this letter in the mail. And I knew what some things could be said to me, what couldn't. But I knew one thing. They had to at least tell me what happened. You know, how did it end up? Well, I got a letter, like I said, that 8 months later, both complaints for rudeness and unprofessional conduct sustained against this one officer. Because and I don't even excuse him for a bad night, he had witness officers there. So I know in this profession, if you make a complaint like that, and if it's sustained, that means guilty. That just has the paramount to ruining a young officer's career, let alone a veteran officer's. And I know where that's going to stay in that officer's personnel file. So you're looking at one person who took something real seriously, that if you do make a complaint, it may take time. And wow. In my case, something did happen of it. And that is one way that you make us do our job better.
Just one quick thing. All of the ways of making a complaint that Lieutenant Frank Lucarelli told you were true, but I'll make it real simple for you guys in this room. I've got a bag full of cards. If you ever see anything, hear anything, witness something that's not proper, you can call me personally. I'm easy to find. I'm right at Lake Merritt BART station where our offices are. So you can cut that down to one person if you want to.
All right. Wonderful.
Okay. Thank you. I too want to thank you for coming out. I do agree that it requires a great deal of courage, I would think. And a commitment to some degree of integrity. I want to be careful that I don't ask a question that you can't answer. I'm going to pose this as a hypothetical, and hopefully you can address it in a general way, because often we are concerned about our children who are at an age where, by virtue of their age, they can be rowdy and absolutely innocent and playful. Have either of you witnessed circumstances in which it's been difficult for you to restrain yourselves simply because the kids were behaving in a way that either threatened your sense of security or your sense that security could be maintained in the community, where you wondered, is this just normal kid behavior, or is this something that is outside the boundaries? That's question number one. That's question number one, and if you want to answer that first, I think that's safe within the boundaries of what you could respond to. I have a 21-year-old son who I drive where he goes. His maturity is being dwarfed because I will not trust him to be on public transportation. And I'm thinking that until he starts behaving like he's absolutely mature at a standard that a man might truly behave, I can't feel safe. And I think that we have other parents who feel similarly.
Thank you for asking that question.
First off, you have a 21-year-old, you said?
I do.
So under the California law, he's been an adult for almost 3 years, if not 3 years. So we have laws that restrict us. We have laws that we must enforce that deal with someone that's an adult. So even though he is a young person, we have to treat him as such. So that's slightly different. Anyone that's under 18 or anyone that attends a public school, then they have, under the penal code, they have school laws that pertain to that. If it's a school activity, whether it's during the normal course of the day or after school activities. So there is leniency, there are directives, there are operational directives that pertain to each individual agency that we have to go by. So most of us that I see here, all of us that I see here that work for BART are parents. So anything that you would find unusual as a parent, we would find, generally speaking, unusual. So for example, to use YouTube again, Mr. Franklin, there is a young man that is being filmed and he's sitting cross-legged upside down on a train and he rides in between two stations. That's not against the law, but that is horseplay and we would not allow him to continue to do that for the safety of himself, for the safety of others. So if you saw someone that manhandled him, that used disparaging or inappropriate language, then I would say that might be a reason for you to either have a complaint or speak to his supervisor, speak to him directly. But by the same token, because he's doing something like that, in response to an officer saying, could you please sit down, you know, you shouldn't do that. If he responded in a very hostile way, if he responded by threatening the officer, and I don't mean you need to get away from me, I mean threatening to harm him. In the penal code, you have to have the present ability. It means you have to be able to harm someone right now. So you can't say tomorrow, I'm gonna hurt you. That's not a threat under the law. So if you do see someone that's acting inappropriately, especially with children, somebody that's disabled, somebody that's incapacitated, meaning under the influence of alcohol or something, we're trained. And when we're not trained, then it's reiterated almost daily the way that we need to be professional and the way that we need to handle it.
So horseplay is not acceptable?
It depends on the type of horseplay and the specific situation.
Horseplay, clowning around, could potentially get them in trouble.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and so we need to be saying to our kids, look, don't horseplay, don't clown around, behave like what? What do you want a 15-year-old to behave like? What do you want a 16-year-old to behave like? Because their natural baseline for behavior might not meet your standard coming out of the inner city.
Well, you're hitting close to home because I have an 18-year-old who just turned 18, and he drives me insane.
Yes.
But what I tell him is that BART is a transportation system. I know you and your friends are going to get loud, you're going to talk, but you need to sit down, you need to use your ticket, you need to get on, and I also give him the other part of the speech about representing me while he's on public transportation. You need to be respectful of other people. I don't want to hear reports of you using profanity and, you know, disrespecting people close by you. My whole thing with him is respect for the other people who are just trying to get from point A to point B. I'm sorry.
Can they be approached by you if they are uttering profanity?
You know, I also have two teenage girls, and they take BART, and sometimes by themselves. I have certain rules, my expectations I have for them. Of course, I want them to make the right decisions when I'm not present. So I can understand everybody's concern for the youth that are taking BART. But I think we're all governed by a certain amount, and that's reasonableness. What is reasonable? My two daughters are all rowdy by nature. But there's a certain point in time where the average person feels like you're impeding on my right to have a safe trip from point A to point B. So it's hard to define. It's not a bright line of anything. There's not a bright line of when certain behavior is unacceptable and it's going to create a situation where the police have to get involved. And so it's kind of hard to answer your question. I think we all need to teach our children to be respectful of everybody else. But we have to keep in mind that children will be children, and they're going to be rowdy. And we have to teach our officers to understand that also.
Well, let's move beyond a youth, and let me ask you as an adult. If I cursed you, if I got in your face and I said, screw you.
It's happened to us all.
And if I looked really intense about it, what could you do to me? I'll leave you with that question. I'm trying to keep it as
generic. He just whispered something real important in my ear. You have to have thick skin. Police officers, our peace can't be disturbed. You can't, I accepted this when I got into this job. You can disturb her peace, and that's where the line comes in. Uh-huh. To answer your question specifically, there are a couple of laws. There's a transit law that all it says is willfully disturbing others on a transit system. It's not well defined, it's very vague, and it can be interpreted in a few different ways. So again, it's like Frank said, it's not a bright line. That's where we earn our money, is if it was easily black and white, one way or the other, it would make our jobs really easy, but it's just not. And so we have to hopefully have some common sense and some experience in being able to tell what is the right thing to do.
But it's not illegal to curse me.
You know, most people up here have at least 20 to 27 years, 28 years of experience. In 28 years, and I whispered to Travis, you have to have thick skin, I'd be lying to everyone in this room, and I'm not going to, if I said everyone that I've worked with for 28 years has thick skin. A lot of them have thin skin. Be very frank about it. I saw it when I first started. I see it now. And most of it comes with maturity. A little more gray hair on top. You start having children. But I wouldn't even say it's all younger. I mean, I was just at my own police department. I mean, I've covered calls, not as much now because of being an administrator. I've covered calls, other officers showing up at scenes from other departments. You just see it. I mean, I know that officers react differently depending on the situation, how they handle things, thick skin versus thin skin. When somebody said, I would hope, I mean, that's what we get paid for, to discipline people. If somebody, said, screw you, and the officer, reacted to that, well, then we have a job to do. Any administrator has a job to do. If they react, just to something like that, or even if it was, even a little more, blunt than that, using a cuss word, not just screw. Police employees, police officers, have good days and bad days. It's not, when they have bad days, it's not acceptable. And if they react to something like that, this like Travis said, this is where we're going to earn our money, and we'll get to it, and then more discipline's going to come in place. But by no means does everyone have the same thick skin, and they do react to things differently.
We need to move on forward. No, we have time for more dialogue. I just wanted to, together as a community, that we acknowledge and show all of our love for the family of Oscar Grant, some of whom are here, and I believe our sister Wanda is listening.
Yes.
Right now to this town hall meeting. Can we give them a big round of applause and show appreciation? Interested in what we're doing here and backs us in our efforts to demand justice. I had a chance to speak with Attorney Burris a few days ago. He's critically interested
in our demand for justice and supports our effort, and God willing, we'll have him here with the town hall very soon. So I just wanted to stop and say that. Since I have the mic, I will ask one question. There's other transit departments that service our area. Amtrak, AC Transit, Muni. None of them, in my knowledge, have an independent police force. How did it come that BART has an independent police force and isn't policed by sheriffs or city localities? Secondly, who finances and funds BART policing?
Yeah, I'll take the first. BART police started back in the 60s when the system first came about. The idea was that there would be a security force, and they would just kind of handle the small things, and that each jurisdiction would then handle the quote-unquote real crime. They soon found that to be problematic because of jurisdiction. Something starts in the city of Oakland on a train, it goes to San Leandro, or now under the tube into San Francisco, and you have jurisdictional problems. And so out of that, it was actually the chiefs of the Greater East Bay that basically decided that you have to have your own police department, number one, just to deal with these jurisdictional issues. The other part of it is there's a whole other part of the job that we do that a lot of people don't know, and it takes a lot of, we actually have to almost be trained like train operators. We have to know a lot about the nomenclature of train. There's a lot of dangerous parts of trains. There's, to give you a good story, it drives us crazy when we'll have a call and say San Francisco police has a armed robbery at a bank. Suspect runs into one of our stations. They chase him into the station, jump down on the trackway, and start chasing the person down through the tunnels. Well, you just don't do that. You have to know who to call, how to cut power, and those kind of things. So there's things very specific to transit policing. And no other, AC Transit is a little bit different in that they don't have exclusive rail. Any other system, like BART, does have a police department, though. And if you go back to Atlanta or DC, Boston, any system that's designed like ours with exclusive right-of-way will normally have their own dedicated police department because they want them to know how to police that special kind of a jurisdiction.
Main question, where your money come from?
That comes from the BART operating budget, which is a public, paid for by the public. 40% about is come from sales tax, and 60% from the fares. And that goes to fund the BART, including the BART Police Department. And AC Transit does commission the Alameda County Sheriff's Department to patrol its buses. And as far as Amtrak, I'm going to find out what they do. That's similar to BART, where we have a cross county line, they have their own. Okay, and then I'll find out about Caltrain too. Do you know about Caltrain? And they cross county and city lines, so I'll find out and get back.
You know, others have riot gear like you
have
got.
All of the other ones.
Washington D.C.
Y'all not only got uniform, you got riot gear.
Right. If we have to compare apples and apples, so BART compared to something like Washington D.C.'s metro, or New York City's metro, or Boston, or Atlanta, they all have police departments. Washington D.C. has riot gear. I've seen it. So.
All right. Well, first I want to thank you guys for having enough nerve to come out. But one of the things that I want to say what the real problem is and what really frustrates the public, especially the African American community, is the fact that you guys can kill somebody and all you got to say is they resisted arrest. And that's all over the country. And our people wind up getting killed, going to jail, going to the penitentiary,
because of this law. Now, Amiano, Assemblyman Amiano, and Leno is pushing, have introduced legislation to change that law, because what we find out later, that the people that started the killing and all this, they've got promoted.
Yeah.
So the culture is, hey, you take care of them niggas, and you know, you're gonna get promoted. And that's what's happening here all over the country. And that's one thing that we're coming down on now. We want your book open so we can see what you're doing. You know, and tell you the truth, I don't see why Bart have to have guns in any case. About them and snatch them off because of their color. In the first place, you didn't snatch no white boys off the train. Who was fighting? And then the first thing you do is haul off and hit one of the, hit the guy, you know, one of the other officers. Why did you hit him? And why did you need to use a taser with your claim? You know, so that's what really frustrates people. Our people are dying across the country, and we need to stop it. But I'm glad you feel the same way. Don't you? Or do you? That Bart police, look, here you stand with seven people lying there and a couple of people, and you in danger? You need to put a taser? You know, that's outrageous. And I mean, I want to ask you, are you all willing to help change that law? Now, I'm glad you got a law, a union law, that helped protect you, but what about us? We ain't wearing no guns. That's what we're talking about, what's happening across the country and what's happening right here. And we want to stop, change that law, but the protection that you got that you need is fine. We need protection from you all.
That's right.
Yeah. That's where the protection is needed. And I think Bart, one of the things Bart should do is first, you can't wear no gun.
Right.
You can't wear no taser. You know, four or five, you got enough men to handle a few people that ain't, you know, is out of line. And if you didn't know, if you got a, ain't nothing no Bart to rob. You know? So, would you be in favor of you guys not carrying guns? And not carrying tasers? You maybe care of Billy Club. That's big enough. With the power you got.
Right.
7-1.
Right.
He didn't have no gun.
Right.
I absolutely understand your frustration. A little bit of my history. I grew up in Richmond. Anybody here remember the Cowboys?
Oh, yeah.
Anybody?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, I could tell you some stories and meet me outside and I will. So I understand the frustration. But just to, and we're kind of into an area again that Pastor Dion talked about, and I don't want to get into the specifics of that case because I don't want to end up going to jail either. But personally speaking, 27-year-old veteran is not, Travis is not going out there unarmed. We take probably about 70 to 80 guns off of people every year.
On bar.
Every year, on bar, on bar. We have I didn't bring statistics with me, but we have armed robberies, people get hit over the head, and they are armed. And it's just the nature of, I'm just not gonna go out there unarmed, just speaking for myself.
I think with the job market, you go out there.
Yeah, you need another.
Anyway.
Bless your heart.
Thank you again for coming. But that's what we were talking about. We got thousands of people in jail and dead under the resisting arrest of people that should never be on the force. Oh boy, there's a police. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We need to right, because we have some other issues we need to deal with, and so ask your question quick, and then you can head to your seat as they answer it.
All right. Well, my-
My name's Yvette Valarca. I'm representing BAM by any means necessary. We've also been calling for disarming the BART police. And one of the questions that was already posed is, if you actually really believe what was done to Ostergrant and that murder is wrong, then you would have to acknowledge that Ostergrant would be alive today if Johannes Meserle and the other police officers weren't carrying guns. Second, it's clear that it's going to take way more than...
Yvette, please get to your question.
I'm getting to it.
No, give me your question.
Okay. Which is, a few of you are here hoping that you could rehabilitate yourselves to the community. But yet, why is Officer Meserle being represented and paid for in his legal representation by the Police Officers Association when he resigned as a police officer in order to not even have to be accountable, even under the current policies? So how can the police officers justify even standing up and representing him if it's not to defend your own right to do exactly what Meserle just did, to do it again?
Get to your question.
So that's my... So I have a question. But, and
it's not an issue.
That is my question.
Hold on a second. Let me get back to where I went to originally. Yvette came in late. They cannot answer any questions regarding the case or the character of those involved in the case.
With all due respect, that's not true. The gag order only applies to the DA and so
Judge Morris Jacobson.
That's all the gag order applies
to. No, the gag order applies to not only Attorney Raines, but the DA and all police officers, all private police investigators regarding the case.
But I still have the question.
Right ahead, I want to hear it.
Which is still around the representation, which is not on the specifics of the case. I still have the question around disarming the BART police. And in reality, here's my question to each one of you. If you can look yourself in the face every morning, and how can you, and really say you're actually trying to fight for justice and protection of the people of Oakland, and not do something that you know you could do, because you know the dirty things that go on with BART police. You know more than we do about the racial profiling, about the setups of people like who've been beaten by people like Meserle before, like Kenneth Carruthers, who tried to file a complaint with BART and was turned away and told that the person was on vacation. So how can you stand here, other than for us to know that you're just trying to rehabilitate BART and your jobs, and not actually try to do something and come forward with the truth to help Oscar Grant's family get justice? Because I want to remind all of you that the man, the police officer, the BART police, who killed Gerald Hall, and he was exonerated too, but in the end, he couldn't live with himself. And he shot himself in the head.
Oh, no, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
Then it was the other one.
He asphyxiated himself.
Okay, thank you. And so I just have to say, because I can't stand here shaking the way I am, seeing this, and I'm sorry I was late, but I still know when I see something that I see that I don't buy, that if we're going to really get at the truth, and I just can't accept hiding behind a gag order or anything else, that we actually demand the truth. Because otherwise, all this is just a whitewash. That's all I see.
Thank you for that. Let me reiterate. See, your name was late. I want to reiterate. The goal of me asking, BART didn't ask to come. I asked them to come after having dealt with them and having had some conversation with some of the directors. The goal is there are some officers on the BART Police Department who feel exactly the way Yvette just articulated. Our job, what I wanted to do was ask us to tell them what we would like them to know, what questions that we have that they can take back to officers that they deal with on a daily, and would they come back and report to us those questions? This is the look. We've been angry since January 1, and we're still angry, and we're still going to be angry. But somewhere in the midst of the anger, we've got to start realizing that anger is a good way to communicate, but it's a horrible way to hear. It is a wonderful way to speak, but an ignorant way to listen. And so if we want to be able to help policy change, not pontification and getting ourselves on film, if we want policy change, then these men are here saying, I'm off duty, I'm not getting paid for this.
But I'm here because there are some people who think just like me, and whatever questions the community have, we're going to go back and we're going to talk about those issues and come back with some legitimate answers. And they already believe one of our demands, and that's a community review board. It's just about how's it going to get done. And so we want to partner with people who want to do the things that we need done.
Yes. Maybe, I don't know if these officers felt like the entirety of the sister's question violated the gag order. So maybe we can frame it in a way.
Whatever, well, they know what violated the gag order. I just wanted to make it very clear, because sometimes we get so excited about somebody's speech that we fail to realize that when the officer says, I cannot answer it, there's this immediate belief of conspiracy. No, that's not what's going on. I was in the courtroom. I was there when Judge Jenkinson put the gag order and who he specified it to. And so we want to be sure that they can answer any question they want. But I wanted to make sure for the people's sake, not for a person's sake, I want to make sure for the people's sake that when somebody says, I can't answer that, that people do not leave here criminalizing them for something that they cannot do.
Here's a generic way to ask the question, perhaps. Is the police officers union or association obligated to defend an employee who quit his position?
That's a good question.
Former Officer Meslick did for his time in the association pay into a legal defense fund. And he has a right to that representation.
Even after resigning.
Correct.
All right.
So I have a couple of questions, and I will keep them as questions. My first question, well, first of all, I appreciate you all being here for all the reasons everyone has said. And I think the value, actually, of you all coming out off-duty and participating in any kind of a public process off-duty would actually be, for the community to be able to formulate some very particular questions and not necessarily have to ask you them in public either. I think this may not be the best. There may be some other follow-up processes that you all could be helpful in. First, though, I would like to get a sense of really who we are talking to, who you all are, not just like your titles, but what your positions are aside from some kind of independent monitoring of BART. And so specifically, to get a gauge of that, I would like to know if any of you thought that Fred Crabtree, who murdered Gerald Hall at the Hayward BART station in 1993, you're probably all familiar with the case. He was a K-9 unit, 25 feet away, or 25 yards, I forgot which, shot him in the back of the head with a shotgun, and Gerald died, and his friend next to him was arrested, and the accusation was that they had stolen a Walkman, and Gerald Hall and many of us, and Gerald Hall's father, who was a fire captain, an open fire captain at the time, Cornelius Hall, many of us fought with the BART board, fought for some sort of independent review and so on. Did any of you take a position on that case? Did any of you know about that case? Did you, and if you didn't, just hearing, because those are the facts of the case, do you believe that he should have been acquitted? In fact, I don't even think he was charged. I mean, he wasn't even fired.
Okay, you want to know a little bit of our background?
I want to know what you all's position is on the murder of Gerald Hall by the BART police. And then also Edward Stewart, because we have two prior murders that occurred. And I would like to know, before you all represent BART to the community, I would like to know who you are, where you're coming from, and if you support these previous BART murders or not.
A little about me. I'm a 9-year veteran in law enforcement, 3 years with another agency and 6 years with BART. So unfortunately, I wasn't here for those two incidents, so I can't comment.
My name is Officer Brooks.
I don't know the specifics about the case. I can't comment.
My name is Officer Brooks. He's also an officer. And I've been a police officer at BART since 1995. I was an Oakland Unified School District officer at that time. So I'm not aware of any of the legal representation that he had or the person that's deceased. So I can't speak to whether it's justified. If you're speaking of the facts of the case, then the only thing I can do is do research on the case, then I can give you my only opinion. That's it.
That's fair.
I was here for it, and I was some time ago. I was an officer just walking the beat, and I'll tell you, I had some issue with it. I wasn't a part of the investigation. That wasn't my function then. But yeah, sure, I had issue with it. And I can't really say any much more than that.
You had some issue, what?
About whether or not it was justified.
I've been here, actually Travis and I got hired a week apart. We've been here 27 years, same time. I was here for both incidents. I was a sergeant at the time. Young rookie supervisor, was not working that day. I think I was even on a graveyard, totally different shift, so I wasn't there. And I think, just like the current case, if you're not involved, and I say it with all sincerity, and I hope you find some way in you to believe me on this. If you're not directly involved in an investigation like the current one, and I have no direct involvement whatsoever, and I wasn't in the other two incidents, I was totally removed from them. I sit on the outside looking in, just like you do. And I mean that, so I mean, I can't even if I try, when his boss threatens him, his boss threatens him, or gives an order that if you release any information, your job is in jeopardy. I mean, you start thinking about your family as far as who you're going to talk to and not talk to. So I probably felt just like Travis did. Anytime, like the Crabtree case and the other one, when someone, let's be frank, when someone shot naked, right, the second incident, okay. And then the other one shot
naked,
yeah, okay, it makes you pause. I'm a human being, it makes you pause, it makes you think. I wonder what happened. But I also have to look at it this way, especially in the Crabtree case, whether we like him or not, but things were taken totally out of Bart's hands by the district attorney at the time, the FBI, the Department of Justice, and that's what the public usually clamors for, and has been clamoring for here, let somebody else look at it. Independent, let another set of eyes look at it, and that's what happened in the Crabtree case. A totally separate set of eyes looked at it, had way more information than I was ever privy to.
But you blew up all over your son. Your son didn't get killed. Mm. And the man she talking about was killed. Mm. Don't you have some kind of opinion, some kind of remorse for that? Mm. Some kind of sympathy as a human being?
Sure. The answer is yes. I never like to see anybody shot at the hands of a police officer and die. But I have to trust, just like I did with my son. I trusted another agency. I trusted them. And 8 months later, they answered me back. I mean, I sat and waited. Just like in the Crabtree case, we all sat and waited for, I don't know how long it was probably a year, while the FBI looked at it, and they came back. They never charged him. Here's another set of eyes. They looked at it, and they took a look at it, and they rendered what they felt happened at the time, which I didn't even have, was privy to information.
I remember the Crabtree case. I had a couple of years on at BART. I have about 24 years of law enforcement total. I'm going to have to ditto what Travis and Greg said, except add that at the time I thought it was a tragedy for the family and for everybody involved. The police department had a black eye at the time, and I wish it didn't happen.
So I would highly recommend, though, if you all are going to come out here and be representatives of BART and some sort of liaison to the community, that you actually do your own homework and understand the specifics of these cases and be able to comment on them. Because these cases are why we are questioning why BART needs guns in the first place. Every time, the only thing we've seen them do with those guns is kill people. We haven't seen them prevent anything, but we've seen them kill people. So I would just encourage you all to do that. You know, otherwise, what's the point? If you're not, if you can't say anything, if you can't say anything, then what are you here to say? Except for that we can't say anything, but we care. So please do your homework, you know, before you come back and try to represent BART. The second, I have two other quick things is so according to the Police Officers Bill of Rights, is it true that the Andrew Carruthers, so Johannes Messerli's beating of Andrew Carruthers before this happened, so in November, that because of the Police Bill of Rights, this is a personnel issue, and does that mean that this is not going to come up because it's a personnel issue? So the fact that he had just beaten somebody, and that if there had been action taken, he might not have been working on New Year's, and Oscar Grant might be alive today if some action had been taken. Now, number one, is that true? And two, do you think it's right?
Are you asking, you got to remember there's two different investigations we're talking about.
Right.
Criminally, anything related to what happened, they can come out with. So a lot of the questions that you're asking and the things that we're telling you that we can't talk about, it's going to come out. I mean, the arraignment hearing is right around the corner. That's the district attorney's job, is to collect all that pertinent information and as it relates to this particular case. So my answer is that yes, for the criminal, yes.
And then finally, what is you all's opinion of G's, of the letter that Police Chief G sent out to the BART police force saying that you should support Johannes Messerli while he's in jail and to visit him, send him money, and to support him, to send him reading materials and so on. You know, what's your opinion of that? And I would like to know, did any of you do that? Did any of you send him money? Or go visit him and write him any letters?
That'd be nice to know.
I can say no, speaking for myself.
Pass the mic.
Okay. I can tell you the history behind the letter that went out. We got a call from a sergeant that works for us now who was a former officer for Alameda County Sheriff's Department, where Messerli is incarcerated. He told this sergeant that people are in there, they're trying to bring money in to put on his prison account book so he can buy candy bars and a cup of noodles or what have you. They're trying to bring in books, they're trying to show up during visiting hours, and just during whatever they are, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 9 to 5. He told them that Messerli, like any other high profile case that has a media bit to it, Scott Peterson is another one, you can't just show up and visit him. You have to go to a specific person, you have to call, you have to make an appointment, they're gonna run you, they're gonna do a criminal history check because they don't want anything to happen to a prisoner on their watch. So that information was relayed, and that person asked, you need to tell your people, if they're going to do this, how are they going to do it? And so the letter, the intent of the letter was not to solicit any information or support for him, but to tell the people, because before this happened, this officer, he was well-liked by others, we knew that people were going to try to put money on his jail account so he could buy stuff from the commissary. We were asked to tell specifically how they do that. They have to talk to this one particular person, that they have to have this particular information, and they have to, they can't just send the book in, they have to buy it online and have it mailed to a particular address. That was the intent of the letter. The other part of the letter, supporting the officers, asking them to maintain professionalism, absolutely stand by that part because I particularly needed them to do that because, excuse me, the last thing that I would want to see was some little thing escalate into another force issue. So a lot of that was my language on that. Was it a bad idea in retrospect? Heck yes. And I wish it could come back, but and you just have to take me at my word or not take me at my word. That was the true intent of the letter, was just to have some orderly way of facilitating that process.
So did anyone here send him money?
Yes. No.
No. Okay.
I sent him some money.
See?
Just playing.
Okay.
Anybody who believe that don't belong in the town hall.
Very funny.
Anybody who believe that don't belong in the town hall.
No.
No, this is not a play thing.
No, this ain't a
play thing. And even if it takes all night to get this straight.
Every time, you got to laugh sometime.
And
time.
Also, I feel insulted when somebody tell me I should feel angry or express my anger and because our country's at war. There's a couple of points that you made and some other people made that I'd like to address. 1970, there may have been maybe 2% African Americans or people of color on any police force across the country. Bart has never been a friend to our community. Bart moved out. When Bart came into West Oakland, into South Berkeley, they moved out 9,000 families, which were homeowners, put in a freeway and put in Bart's system. Okay, the people in the community were not part of a decision process. Okay, so let's do our homework for real. Okay, so that created an economic problem, a housing problem, crime went up because Bart and the public's system here. That led to the grassroots movements in the community because then the police that they were recruiting from the South, which is my other question, where are you from? How long have you lived in Oakland? What is the sensitivity training? So if Messerly had gone to church with Mrs. Grant that Sunday, I don't think he would have been beaten on a Sunday night before, especially on New Year's Eve. Also, where do y'all, where are your tasers placed? Are they big yellow ones? Are they right on your belt? Are they down here near your knee? You know, where are your tasers? Okay, where are they placed on your physical body? Also, I want to know, besides a high school diploma, how much college are you required to have? And if you are reviewed maybe every 2 years or every year to make sure that you're mentally competent and emotionally competent to serve the community that we're paying for in this community. I think besides the review board would clear that thing, but to answer to the people, because y'all cover for each other. I have I've got four grandsons. I have babies down at the Berkeley flea market. And the Bart police were answering the call down there. They would have did this at Rock Ridge Bar Station, but they ran into the crowd with their, and you know, everybody knows how crowded Berkeley Bart is on a Saturday afternoon. This policeman just drove into the crowd. I had to yank my grandsons back out the way. I waited around to speak to him. All the rest of them protected him. Not even a damn apology. Not even an apology. You're arrogant. And this really angers me that you come with this little blue book that nobody on the police force has ever respected anybody in this community. You all just got on the police system because of the people in the community. They wouldn't even let you in the front door. So come on now. It was us who said, if you're going to be on the police force, at least live in the community. So how many of y'all live in Oakland? How many of you go to church in Oakland? How many of your children go to school in Oakland? Do you belong to any community program that serves the needs of our children in this community?
Thanks. No, I don't live in Oakland, but I live close by, pretty close. Just down the 880. I live in San Leandro. What else? The question, the taser, I carry my taser on my left side.
Why do you carry your taser on your left side?
It's my non-gun hand, so I have to draw it and drop my left hand. That's why I choose to carry that. As far as the educational requirements, I believe it's about 2 years of college. I have a four-year degree. My parents kicked my butt for choosing this career because they wanted me to go to law school. I went this direction. But if I knew I didn't like it, I was always had that option. So that's a little bit about me.
I was born in San Francisco. I live in East Oakland. I've lived in East Oakland since 1989. I moved to East Oakland in 1976. I attended open public schools. My parents, both, one worked for Peralta Community College.
Hold your point. Brothers and sisters, I'm, you know, it's disrespectful.
Thank you.
Now, the men are here answering your questions, our questions. Let them answer the questions. You invited them. And if you didn't invite them personally, somebody that's in leadership invited them. But don't be disrespectful and talk while they talk, answering your question.
That's right. That's right.
Thank you. Please continue answering the question.
In addition to that, my father has worked for Oakland Unified School District, still does. I don't know what else I can tell you. I coach. I have coached for PAL. That's not something that's for pay. We reach out to the community through those resources. We've donated food that's part of Lieutenant Savage's management's team that they do annually. So if you believe that there are things that BART police officers individually or collectively don't do specifically in Oakland or some of the other communities that we traverse through, then that's our fault for not letting you know. We don't always have the form and we don't always tend to publicize that. So that's not something that we should continue to do.
Do you wear a taser gun? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. If you want to ask a question, there's a line. Get in the line. You're welcome to ask a question.
That question was already asked. All of y'all answered. If they wear a taser gun, what did they wear?
Well, if it's already been asked, don't yell out from the audience. Please. Hold the point. Hold the point. Please. There's a line here. They haven't limited you from standing in the line. If your question has not been asked or answered, stand right here and ask it.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Let's be disciplined and dignified. All right. Continue.
Go to the subject matter experts if I fail, because I'm administrative. I don't personally carry a taser. I have had the training, but my understanding is it's allowed to be carried on your off-gun side or on your off-gun or on your gun side. Yeah, why don't you? Thank you. I'm in the office.
All right. If I explain it, I would use too much police terminology. I'm sorry. Okay, the policy is you can carry it on your weak side, the side that you don't have your gun on. You can carry it there. You can carry it also where your gun is, but it has to be drawn with the hand that you don't draw your gun. You understand? It's cross-drawn. You can carry it using your strong hand, but it has to be on the opposite side of your body where you have to reach across your body. And that's the, and you forget one step, but you can also carry it on your hip, which wrapped around your hip with a, on the opposite side of the gun, again using your weak hand. So that's the. I hope I explained it well, but the different ways you can carry.
Greetings. I have a really quick question. I want to know: is there any kind of data that can be furnished to the community that substantiates the need for BART police to ever carry weapons? I don't know how many people have been. I heard Chicago being mentioned, and you know, or you know, different cities. You know, Washington D.C. and you know these cities. And my family's from the East Coast, and I get on a PATH train from Jersey. You know, go to Manhattan, do it all the time. I just don't understand how it is that they don't have the same. You know, I mean, they of course they have police, but they're not killing people the way that they don't have a record like they do out here. So is there any data that can be furnished to us as a community? Because we do, you know, civil officers, civil servants, we pay. You know, I pay my taxes. I just got yanked out of a whole lot of money from my taxes, so I'm paying. And can something be furnished to us in a adequate amount of time? Because usually when policies are put out there, there's data, you know, that substantiates. I mean, how many of us in the community have killed or maimed or hurt a BART policeman? And then just, you know, a couple weeks ago, there was an incident, a stabbing, BART parking lot. Well, usually BART police are usually in the parking lot. So is there any data that we can get immediately or in enough, you know, good enough time?
I will do the research. And as soon as our organization can come up with the justification for why we have an armed police force. And I will provide that to Pastor Dion for his distribution.
Okay, because I think that for a lot of us to even get past some of the policies.
Okay, that's a good
that
point.
We have to have that
statistics of, you know, what our police office department does, how many guns they cover, why, you know, the violent crimes that they address. So we will, as soon as I can, I don't have that information with me today, but we will get it to you as soon as possible.
Okay.
And we'll distribute it to Pastor Dion.
And I think the community will appreciate that. Thank you
for your question.
I'm back again. I'm going to ask quickly. First of all, I wanted to share something with you guys, but I do want to ask a question to piggyback on what she just talked about. Given the facts of the history of how the BART Police Department even came into being, initially, quite naturally, as you full well know, prior to BART even being constructed, 3 years prior, the call went out from BART administration to ask the Sheriff's Department to police their agency, which they turned it down. And the reason they turned it down was because of the ambiguity of the whole system that was going into play. Can you find the legislature or documentation that supports the legislature that even made BART police legal within its system? That needs to be brought back. If you have it, please bring it back. And even though you're barred from talking about the case, I'm not going to talk about that, but I am going to talk about the qualifications. According to my research, Messerly did not qualify to be a BART police officer. So if nepotism was a factor, I'm hoping that it comes out in the trial.
Okay, I that information, your first part of your question, may be on our website, but if it's not, then I will, in the
it's my, not there.
My information that I'll send to Pastor Dion, I will package that together.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, my name is Randall Evans. I first want to thank Brother Euler for telling me what happened. I'm standing this line. So I really can't ask the kind of question one, but I heard some things, so I'm just going to see, can I get what I heard. You said that you have something in your briefcase that we're going to get back to you.
All right, this is staying my cards.
Got that.
Yeah.
And then I just want to say, in behalf of moving forward, we really need to be involved in another meeting here that gives us the opportunity, not only from San Francisco, but all around to your system with the money that's coming down from the president. We need to be deeply involved in your money and figure out a way to involve in your business. Thank you.
Hello. I wanted to ask some questions. How many are BART police up here?
Oh,
all right. The next time we have a meeting, I suggest that all of you be here, not just some of y'all, because the rest of the folks that's not here, half of those people have been involved in other situations. Which district are you from?
From all over. I work at headquarters.
Oh, I know you two. And I'm talking about the rest of them.
I have patrol, so I have the whole system.
I'm a lieutenant, and I work in patrol. And I'm in charge of everything from Pittsburgh all the way to Orinda and from Ashby to Richmond. So I have what's called the RNC line. And all the personnel that work in those on the night shift, so swing shift, all the personnel that work at night on both those lines work for me.
Okay. What are your preparations if this whole Oscar Grant case doesn't go out according to plan for the people?
In terms of
in terms of if Mesley is found not guilty, what are your preparations?
In term, you mean in case there's civil unrest or that kind of
civil
thing?
Civil unrest.
We will staff, we will protect bar patrons, mm-hmm. employees, and we will protect the system.
Okay, that's good.
I have a question. I wanted to be respectful of the structure, so I stood in line with everybody else. Given the fact that you all represent the department on various levels, supervisorial, beat, and whatever other areas you represent, and certainly you're not able to talk about aspects of the case specifically, fine. But whenever incidences happen or serious problems come up in the public eye, oftentimes you have laws that are passed that reflect that incident or that situation. Megan's Law, Ryan White laws, three strikes with the Richard Allen Davis thing. So, and sometimes they'll even name laws after persons. So Oscar Grant may have a law and should have a law. But the question becomes, because of this incident, do we now begin to look at ourselves as a department internally with you as employees, supervisors, trainers, administrators, union officials, etc., are you actively and intensely involved in looking at all aspects of BART as it relates to its relationship to the public, its interaction? The supervisors say, look, some of us have thinner skin than others. Well, that's unacceptable. I don't want to meet somebody who may have a lesser degree of tolerance than another, but I want a standard. If I were to shop at McDonald's, I want the hamburger in Oakland that I would get in London, England. I don't want, depending on how you acted at home or your wife got into an argument with you, and now I got to bear the brunt of that as a patron to BART. So, I mean, some of that we just can't accept, which is, you know, up and down, Richter scale kind of attitudes, depending upon how we feel that day, determines the kind of policing we may get. So I think we've got to, I'm asking you, as concerned officers, administrators, etc., are you all organizing among yourselves and strengthening your voice in terms of reforms, in terms of the kind of systemic changes, adjustments, so that what happened to Oscar Grant and others who were like Oscar Grant that may not have been murdered, but certainly have been beaten, certainly have been unjustly persecuted, it just didn't get captured on tape, and quite frankly, many in the community's position is that had this not been captured on tape, certainly we wouldn't be having this dialogue, because that probably would have been justified in some way. So I think that even though you've come, and that is a good thing, and I wanted to say to the brothers and sisters here, when you invite people as guests to your home, there's a certain amount of respect that you should show. It's different than going down the bar and them cutting you off and not letting you speak, and then we have to come from another bag because of the lack of the ability to express ourselves. But you're in your home now. So what are you doing as a group beyond coming here? You know your system. You know your processes. You know your protocols. You know your procedures. What are you doing to change, modify, improve, or write up what needs to be changed, modified, or improved so that Oscar Grant doesn't happen again
from your internal perspective, then I have one more question.
The answer is yes, and I'm going to defer some of it over to Greg. Yes, we are looking at everything. The whole purpose of this this whole review system that you've been hearing about at all the board meetings is to look at the department from top to down, policies. The thing that you didn't mention that's very important is training. You know, how much training people get, is it adequate? And I know Greg has been involved in a whole big process, and so is Bob, in terms of looking at things from top to down. My last week was spent actually going over the training aspect. How much training are we getting? How much diversity training have we had? When was the last time we sent people? Those kind of things. So the simple answer is yes, there's a whole lot going on now. And I would actually like Greg to just maybe, can you talk about any of the stuff that you're
I was just going to say, frankly, some people might not be like me saying this at my work, but we need to do a better job of training.
That's right.
Okay? And we, and more training. And as a matter of fact, I'm a big believer, you can't do enough training. Now, the almighty dollar plays a lot into that, everyone. You know, all the employees that work for our police department, the city we're standing in, every city, it's very expensive to train. I don't mean to minimize that's an excuse, but it's very expensive. You know, you take 5 or 10, 15 people off the street for a day, you have to pay others to go, to take their place, and it's very expensive. But with that said, we need to, I think anyone here, I know, I think, talk about looking ourselves in the mirror, I think the young lady said earlier, that's where I look at myself in the mirror. As an administrator, a manager department, if we're really being honest with ourselves, we have to do a better job of training in all areas. You know, we all think of every officer who comes to work and after they've been in a job for a while, it's always the big things, driving a car. These are all important, by the way. We always think of the biggies where people can get hurt seriously. Driving a car, carrying a firearm, things that can, obviously, why we're here today, what can happen as a result of any law enforcement officer, especially the things that have a lot of liability behind them. And every agency thinks about those all the time. But there's a whole wealth of other kind of training that, you know, that we get in day-to-day contacts with someone that doesn't involve the use of driving a car or the use of a firearm. Culture diversity, I think Travis just mentioned it. That's a biggie. If I could quickly go back, I would, you're looking at one individual. I was born and raised in the East Bay. Okay? My exposure to the inner cities 27 years ago was, luckily, two of my grandparents grew up in Oakland. So, and they had businesses in Oakland. I don't know if this bank is still here now, but I remember my grandmother working at Crocker Bank downtown. I think it was Crocker Bank. So I remember coming as a youth to downtown Oakland a lot, going out to lunch with my grandmother. I'll be honest, I didn't know downtown Oakland. To me, it was like, oh my goodness. But my grandfather had a business in Oakland, owned it for 50 years, a roofing company, and they lived up on the top of Broadway, just past 40th Street. And I remember coming to Caldecott 3, 4, 5 times a year, and that was my exposure to an inner city. You know, I mean, at least I was visiting Oakland, going downtown to lunch, but I remember my mom taking that. But I'll be frank, I was born and raised on the other side of Caldecott Tunnel. And so that was my quickly being raised when I got hired here, and I started working in other areas, Richmond, San Francisco, and other areas, and especially in San Francisco, because you have all those different districts. Culture shock for me 27 years ago.
Just one short, quick comment. Greg said it's very expensive to train, but it's our job here to take what we're hearing here and somehow influence directors, the general manager, that it's more expensive not to train.
And you asked what they're doing internally, and they're working, they have their union meetings where they're organizing. They asked to come here today to get to hear. You know, they're tough questions, and it's a dialogue that they're willing to engage in. And I respect all the police officers for being here. As an organization, We have a subcommittee of our board that sits atop the organization that reports to the public. I am elected by the people of Oakland and San Leandro and Berkeley and Hayward. And it is our responsibility to ensure that there's some changes, that this is not something that happened and let's move on. We're gonna take a serious look from the top down of the police department and review our policies. And also to look at what we've done beyond the police department. You know, when this happened, no one came to the BART board meeting and said, hey, back off, people. BART is a good organization. Someone told about the history of us going through West Oakland and tearing up houses through our eminent domain. And we have to do a better job as an organization beyond our police department to build relations in the community. And we will do that.
Well, one of the problems you have, and I know you wanted to speak to this, I'll wait.
I don't want to take too much time, but I'll probably get in trouble with my supervisor on Monday, but I'm off duty. But
you shouldn't have to get in trouble with any supervisor up here.
All right.
But these are the sensitive ones.
Things tend to get outside of the realm. But anyways, it's either pay now or pay later.
That's right.
Okay. And the Officers Association has taken steps. We have provided the BART board ad hoc committee with our plan. We came with a three-pronged proposal. It's just a rough draft, but we think we can do. It's not only just cultural diversity. It's dealing with people with mental illness, dealing with the homeless,
the elderly,
dealing with people with special needs. It's a whole. It's about life experience. Okay, and I think that's a big thing. I worked at Santa Rita Jail before I came here, and the one thing going in there, I'll admit, I was scared. I was scared. I'm sitting here, I'm like, man, I'm going to be in there with criminals. But you know what? If you treat people with respect, they'll treat you back with respect. And I took that over here. And I think that's something that a lot of people need to learn. Probably people in my own agency need to learn. You treat people with respect, and you should get it back. If you don't get it back, then you got to take a different approach. Okay, and that's something that I've taken. I maybe have a different policing style than most people. I'm a little more easygoing. I'm a little intimidating because I'm big, but I'm just a big teddy bear. But yeah, I'll admit it. I'm not a rough and tumble type of guy.
Well, and BART should not have any rough and tumble kind of guys. You have a badge. The badge is your authority. And if it gets beyond your control, you have state, federal, and all those other law enforcement entities that back you up. See, BART is a transit system. But if somebody was talking about the history, you know, BART was designed to satisfy white flight out of the cities of where they were becoming blacker and browner. So many whites in the 60s fled to the suburbs, but they had to come back into the city to work downtown in San Francisco and other places. And so BART was set up as a way for them to come in and get out without having to deal with the natives. Now that's the history. So the police departments were set up to make them feel secure as they're going back out to Walnut Creek and all these other places. So if you're going to police BART and make that a military operation, when young whites come from San Francisco on New Year's night wilding and acting up, but they will not get handled the same way young black, Latino, and Pacific Islander youngsters get looked at and handled. When you talk about cultural sensitivity, that's what you're talking about. Perception. How do I perceive these nine toughs who happen to be white? I perceive them as college students that are just out on the town going to a ball game. But when I see these eight or nine young black and Latinos, I'm looking at gang, domestic terrorists, Al-Qaeda, and all kind of things that are coming through police union manual training conferences where young black and brown males are being looked at in law enforcement circles as enemy combatants. You get this information. You go to these conferences where they talk about new urban threats. So we've got to retrain BART as an example
of other departments that need to be retrained. So what you need is a timetable. You can't just have an indefinite training process. You're already almost 2.5 months from the murder of Oscar Grant. In other words, with all deliberate speed, your organization is going to have to move a lot faster with a lot more input from this community in a transparent process that says we will have a report on our desk offering the systemic changes by April 1st or April 30th. You got to be that definitive. It didn't take President Obama 50 weeks to study whether or not to close Guantanamo. He did it the first day in office. See, that's called affirmative action. And that's what this wounded community needs now. So you have to set a date, but we can't do it by April 30th. Then the bar board has to demand that if you can't do it, somebody else will get it done. But we're not going to leave this community to speculate, to guess, to feel like they're not being heard. That has gone on too long, and we're not going to let it continue. So you got to set some dates specific. Training has to include the community. We're going to have to teach you how to handle us. And then the last question, and it's a brief question. When you talk about arming, to have you all armed with tasers, with nightsticks, with guns, and all of the things that you're armed as if you're an occupying force, the airports have a system of security that you go through detectors. You cannot walk through with a gun. You can stop people before they get on a BART. Somebody said you confiscated 80 guns last year. Then you've got to find a system prior to people getting on your bus or your trains that disarm them. And there has to be new technology out there. But I think you need to de-emphasize paramilitary and emphasize service and community if you're going to police properly in the 21st century.
I just want everybody to know that it, those who you don't know, that is Minister Christopher Muhammad, who is a part of the Circle of Leaders. You didn't get an opportunity to give him some love earlier. I want you to give an opportunity to give him some love now. We also have another Circle of Leader with us, and that is from Coltrane, Archbishop King. Let's give him a hand. He's one of our Circle of Leaders. All right, everyone, we're going on mess.
I have a question first before I speak. Okay, and the question is, I heard a lot about what happened and what the police did in the past. And the question I want to ask, and it's not only just for them, I don't know when anyone else remember or not, but when they first opened BART going to Concord, they hung a black guy there at the BART station in Concord, California.
Timothy Lee.
Right. Okay. All right. Was any of you all with BART at that time?
I was there, but I believe that was actually a Concord case.
I was there with BART at the time.
Was it a BART case?
No,
no, it was a Concord case.
It occurred.
Happened nearby.
Frankly, it occurred.
No, but
it was on a parcel like 50 feet, 75 feet away from the station.
It was in the city of Concord.
The way it come out to Earth and all the things that happened at the BART station, you know, just like they move things, they plant things, and they move things, But anyway, it was at the BART on BART property. Anyway, I'm going to this, and I heard one lady speak earlier. I'm involved in a lot of legal stuff. all across the country from here to Washington, D.C., and I had a $250 billion lawsuit in the federal court in 94. Well, this case was filed because BART, Caltrain, the railroad companies, all in there brought together. The city donated this land to BART. Okay, now they bought some of it from the railroad companies, which the railroad companies bought public trust land property, okay, when they bought this property. But the railroad companies also donated $10 million to BART. At the same time, they was taking all these people home down there behind this domain, the railroad, all of them was involved in that. And you said earlier that Oscar Grant has a, how do you put that, a case? A law?
No, he's saying that there should be a law
right
in the name of Oscar.
There is one, and it's called human rights, civil rights. You see what I mean? Because this book here is talks about public rights, okay, and safety rights and stuff. But this is for the BART police and for the people working BART. What we need to do is bring back, first of all, the civil rights package that shows you all of your rights under the law, under civil rights. Okay, I'm getting to the question. Okay, the question is that I just want to bring out because there's been so much about this. And BART, you understand what I mean? That this, all of this here, that happened in West Oakland with BART, and also with all of the property that they received, which is taxpayers' land. So everybody in here is taxpayers. So what BART received is part of your land to build on. Not only that, they received your money, okay? $10 million, okay, to build on. So we actually is part owner of BART. You understand what I mean? Under our civil rights and under the law and under justice. That's what I'm going to lay.
Thank you.
I'm not that short. one quick question. Thank you very much.
Before you ask, I just want to address Minister Christopher Muhammad's request for a timeline.
Right.
And we will get that to you of what we are doing. And it might shift, but we'll start with an estimate. And things might get pushed back, but we'll try to frame it in a way where we can, this is what to expect from our organization, and we'll get that to you.
Commander Gibson and Director Franklin, I wanted to direct my concern regarding substance abuse testing and substance abuse usage. And the question, of course, is, are officers tested, and under what circumstances? Is it spontaneous? Do they have opportunity to prepare for it? And then the second part of that question has to do with substance use that they may not even be aware of is problematic. For example, the use of Red Bull and other stimulant drinks. As a medical doctor, I have awareness among my colleagues that this is particularly problematic with aggressive personalities who are doing intensive work where the adrenaline surge comes upon them because of the circumstance. And if they've got Red Bull under their belt or an equivalent under their belt, it can make a situation far worse than it needed to be.
To answer the first part of your question, yes, we come under a federal standard, and actually we're different than any other police department. Oakland does not get tested like we do. We get tested randomly. If my number comes up, somebody shows up at the door at my office and says, follow me to the bathroom, and we test for, marijuana, opiates, cocaine, phencyclamine, and alcohol, and methamphetamine.
Steroids.
We don't test for steroids. That's new stuff. And it, as you follow from all the stuff in the media. But no, we don't test for steroids. We test under the federal standard, which is for those. We can also test
under probable cause, which means I show up and I'm just not acting right, and I'm staggering or whatever, and my supervisor sees that and says, you don't look right, follow me to the bathroom. We do post-accident testing. If I get into a car accident, somebody's injured, or I do a certain amount of damage, I believe it's like $5,000 damage, follow me to the bathroom. In terms of those other substances, caffeine, Red Bull, like I'm sure you're absolutely correct. Those are the kind of things that we just, as managers, we have to look at, we have to do a better job at looking at our officers that work for us and see those kind of signs, or as I've been pointed down that level, we can't just do a medical test for anything like that. We have to just, again, use some experience, and we need to know if somebody is tweaking too high on Red Bull. Right.
Last question.
My last question.
Okay, so my question is going to be kind of a two-part question. And I guess the first part being, do you guys have a system of addressing human rights abuses? Or do you just wait for a dead body and then to react to that? So basically, do you have like a proactive approach to figuring out where human rights are being abused? And also, do you guys have a profile, operating profile of the type of individual that would abuse rights in order for you to identify them coming into your organization?
Thank you. Thanks. To answer the first part, and I'll be absolutely honest, yes, we need to get better at being on the front end of the curve, because it's not just us. So you talk to our counterparts in any other jurisdiction, Oakland, Berkeley, and we tend to react. And that's what we're doing somewhat now. And one of the things that we need to look at, whoever said look yourself in the mirror, one of the things we need to look at, and I've heard it from this guy 100 times. No, you. we need to get on the front end of the curve. And so to answer your question, we have not done a good job at that, to be honest. And not just with this case, with some of the other things, like with the training that people have talked about. In terms of a profile, and no system is perfect, let me say, but all of our officers, again, just like anybody, all the other local municipal, go through a thorough background. And I've been a background officer, and I know the kind of things we look into. We're going out, we're looking at medical records, we're looking at doing site tests, we're talking to neighbors, we're talking to neighbors of neighbors, we're talking to your friends and your friends of friends, girlfriends, ex-girlfriends, and so, yeah, we do a polygraph, and so we're trying to do a very good job, and I've, again, been a part of that process, and we try really hard to weed out those people who are going to cause us trouble.
All right. Give them a hand. Just to reiterate one last question, are all of you willing within the next 30 days to report back here to us so that we can move forward with some ideas? How many of you are willing to come back within a month all together? Not, y'all got to coordinate to come together so that whatever the community may need to know or ask, we can ask those questions and you can give us some more information. How many of you are willing to do that? Thank you. Like we do with everybody who comes here from BART or city council or anything of that nature, we're not going to let them stay here while we strategize. So we're going to just appreciate them for being here, the time they have. We're going to ask them nicely to go ahead and go about your daily business.
We can ask our assistant godman, Brother Oscar, who wants to share thoughts before we close out tonight. Can we give our sister a big round of applause?